episode 207 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlandish Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or just tuning in, we're happy you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We love to hear your feedback on ideas and ideas for topics, so please be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is Lindsay, and this week I am joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Sandy, Laura, and Elizabeth. Travel can be one of the most rewarding experiences in our lifetime, whether the goal is to see the world or to visit long-distance friends and family. However, when we travel with people who have some additional needs for support with mobility, with specialized medical equipment, with a sensitivity to smells and sounds, with memory recall, or even food allergies, we may be faced with challenges we don't anticipate, issues that simply aren't there when we're traveling on our own. Your loved one may not be mobile without a wheelchair, or they may have a specific health condition such as Alzheimer's disease, be on the autism spectrum, or have heart problems. Any of these can make vacationing much more complex. Regardless of whether you're traveling by family, car, cruise ship, rail, or plane, as with any other vacation, preparation is key. Plan ahead for some of the most common travel needs so that you and your family will be able to enjoy a hassle-free trip that's memorable for the right reasons. So let's talk about Laura. So some of the things we want to start with, we're looking at traveling with a few. What are your...
I think we start with kind of the old Girl Scout motto, which is kind of be prepared, you know, and one of the ways to, you know, be prepared, and, you know, I'm sure we can all touch on this, is that there are, especially, and I'm talking things that you can do, but also things that a good reason to call a travel agent that we have access to, is there are ways for us to do things like, call ahead to the resort you're going to, the cruise line you're going to, and make sure that they know that you need gluten-free on this trip, that they know that you are bringing a CPAP and they need to make accommodations, you know. I just recently sailed. I became the proud owner of a CPAP this summer and sailed on Royal Caribbean, and I found out that they will provide you with your distilled water and an extension cord. And they had that waiting in my room. Mm-hmm. So it's things like that that we know that, like, the right channels to help you be prepared. It's, being able to, you know, call the airlines and make sure there's a wheelchair waiting, that they know you need that kind of assistance.
But then I would add to that to also don't rely on your preparation. It's important if you have a food allergy to re-mention that. So I've had clients say to me, well, when I got there, they didn't seem to know about my food allergy. Well, they might have known about it, but they either didn't want to embarrass you, or they didn't have the piece of paper in front of them, or whatever. So it's always good to restate any special needs that you might have, you know, upon arrival too. Don't only rely on the paperwork to be in order. It may very well be in order, and they may ask you about it again just to make sure they have it right.
And sometimes they want to just reiterate what exactly it is, because there's sensitivities and then there's allergies, and they want to make sure that nobody's going to get an upset tummy or something like that. So, yeah.
Well, it's also things like if you have a child or someone in your life who's really sensitive to noise, you know, or really sensitive to other sounds, that we can oftentimes call and see what we can do to request, you know, a room that's way in the corner or that's far removed from where a section of the, you know, the resort that there may be, you might be right next to the pool where the bands are playing or that kind of thing. So it's big things and small things that, you know, it never hurts to mention kind of those needs rather than getting there and then, you know, being frustrated about where your room placement is.
Yep. But it's important for you as the traveler too, to be, to make a list of those sensitivities and those needs, just to help think through all the situations, because if you're going someplace you've never been before, you may not know how noisy it's going to be, how stimulating it's going to be, or, and even things like, I have for clients who have severe claustrophobia, called hotels to get lower level rooms. that's something that they would normally have done when they travel once they get there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we can actually think about those things ahead of time for them as well. So, or, you know, they don't ask for it and have to walk up 8 flights of stairs, you know, things like that. So
they're not getting it up there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And probably a really great place to start when you're thinking about traveling, if you have any type of special needs or concerns, is to talk to your doctor, first of all, for approval for the type of travel that you want to do to see if it's something that you can do. And then also tips. And, like, if you have even, which I hadn't never dealt with until my second to last cruise, was the first time I ever had a problem with motion sickness. And it had never occurred to me, go see a doctor beforehand and get mm-hmm. that prescription and have it on you. So even something as simple as that to have on you,
yeah.
any meds that you might need or anything that could arise.
That's always something I'm good about with my kids, but not so much just for me.
For you, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's harder when it's for yourself because you're a mom. It's easier if you take care of other people.
Yeah.
But I think it's, you know, just letting your doctor know that you're traveling, period. It's just kind of a good, you know, that if he gets a call from another country or that, you know, something's gone wrong, that letting him know that, you know, here's where you're going, here's how long you're going to go for, you know, just in case something happens, that they know that to accept that phone call or to jump right on that if they get that kind of communication.
Yeah.
Well, and I, looking ahead at some of the tips, because we, of course, have a bullet list because Laura gives us a cheat sheet. Which, but one of these is knowing where the medical facilities are at your destination. And that actually made me think of two things. One is know your insurance provider, because your travel insurance provider, a lot of times they will have assistance where you can call them and say, this is happening, where should I go? And they can get you to the closest appropriate medical facility. They'll know if that hospital has the equipment that you need for the problem that you're having. And they'll also know if that hospital will admit you, because sometimes you may go to a hospital that's only for certain people, you know, depending on the country that you're in, there may be hospitals for various classes or, for, you know, that one that I've heard is, in some countries, there'll be a hospital just for royalty, but you won't necessarily know that until you try to get in the door.
Wow.
Little things like that will help get you treatment faster. The other thing is, Laura, did you notice on this ship that we were just on the Harmony of the Seas, they have a dialysis center on board? Did you see that?
So I saw dialysis at sea, but that's not a dialysis center. That's a, I looked into that for my cousin when they were going to Alaska. That's a service that you pay to cruise with you.
The dialysis center at Royal, did they have, is it staffed or was that you?
That's what she was saying.
So basically, I mean, they probably do it in wherever the ship's doctor is, but you have to pay for the cruise fare for that person to be on the ship and to administer your dialysis at sea. That's the way that comes.
Okay, I've heard of that service as well. I thought this was different.
Well, I saw the sign. It said, I thought it was the same thing as what I called.
Okay.
Because it said dialysis at sea, so I thought it was.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe we both need to learn that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I noticed, Laura, as we were getting off the ship, there were signs for dialysis. I guess it was dialysis. I thought it said dialysis center, so obviously I didn't read it very closely. Sandy said that it said dialysis at sea.
It could be that I didn't read it closely because I thought I knew what it was. Maybe. Anyway.
But yeah, there were signs pointing to, you know, and there was clearly a fairly large medical facility on that ship. The Harmony of the Seas is a huge ship, so I would expect it to have a much larger.
That's one thing I've never toured is the medical part.
They don't really like you to go down there because that's where sick people go.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, you don't want to go down there if you're not sick, because then what if they say, oh, we're going to quarantine you now? You know?
Yeah.
You're like, no.
Well, you know, there are some cruise lines that have a doctor and nurse on board, and it's good to know if that's really important to you, that, you know, it is going to be some of the smaller, more expensive ships, but if that's important to you, there are cruise lines that do have a doctor and a nurse on board, you know, and we can help you find those kind of things also.
They don't all have a ship's
doctor? They all have to have a ship's doctor. It's just the quality.
It just might not be Doc from the Love Boat.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are, it should be noted too that they are rather expensive. So for those listening who just have a little bit of the sniffles, you probably don't want to go down there until you're
sick. My cousin did that, and I think he said it cost him $100 or something. But then I was like, well, you had insurance. Did you file that?
Well, it's the same thing like Lindsay was saying for your motion sickness medication. It's far better for you to go to your doctor first, because if you have to go on board, it costs significantly more.
Now, Sandy and I had we were on the Eurodam with Holland, and we were able to just go to the desk and get a motion sickness pill.
It was kind of like if you were at Disney and you went to their first aid center and you asked for aspirin or something, they give you like a one dose packet.
Yeah,
that's what that was.
And that was the first time I never had to do that. And I up until that moment, I was unaware that you could just go to the, now I don't know if other cruise ships do this, or maybe they only had it because we had had a particularly rough day at sea.
I bet you they have it. I bet that's normal. I think it's probably normal.
But yeah, it's definitely something to be aware of. And I like that you put in here, I have to mention number four, pack as lightly as possible for Heidi.
So Laura,
well, that's because, you know, and you guys saw some of this, especially we were, you know, when we were getting off the ship, you know, that it's they can't help you. Mm-hmm. So they help with the wheelchair, but they can't help with any luggage. So oftentimes if there's a care provider with you, they've got their own luggage and your luggage. So it's, you know, it's you just really need to think smart about, it's like you've got your carry-on, and extra, you know, if you have a CPAP machine or something extra like that. So it just, it behooves you to, because even if they're pushing your wheelchair through the airport, someone's got to be dealing with that. Or you know, I was sitting in the airport, I was watching that if you use a walker and they're pushing you in a wheelchair, more and more airports are getting away from using the big, large, beeping carts because they've been deemed safety hazards, and they just have people, individuals pushing your wheelchair. So now if you have a walker and they're pushing the wheelchair, someone's got to be carrying your walker and holding the luggage.
And the luggage and juggling everything. And I did notice when they made that announcement, I was curious as to how that would work. And then that goes along with it, making sure that all of any, well, of course, any of your travel documents, anything that you need, your passport, your anything that you should not be able to live without or have stress not having, and your medications are all easily accessible. Because if you are in a wheelchair, you want to be able to grab your things. You want to be able to have them with you at all times. So having like a little day pack or a smaller bag and then your not a bag. That really makes sense.
And it is key. You know, it is key to have those medications on you, because that's.
Yeah.
I've had clients tell me, "Oh, well, I had enough for a few days, and then I put the rest in my suitcase." That as our friend Donna will tell you, you can go a week without ever seeing your suitcase. I mean, it can get really, really lost. So you
stuff can get stolen out of your suitcase.
You need to keep that stuff. Well, stuff can get stolen out of your.
Oh yeah, you should never put prescription anything in your suitcase.
It may seem excessive, but it doesn't really benefit you to break that up into two different bags. Just
and I should say even that's important to think of even when it's non-prescription, because I've been in the unfortunate situation of where I needed that Advil, that Tylenol, and I left it in my suitcase.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't a prescription
or
bottle.
My eye drops.
I thought it would be okay.
Yeah.
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 Just, you can't guarantee.
Well, and even having it to be a little bag that you can put underneath your seat, if you're traveling with a, you know, a child, an adult who's going to need something to snack on, who's going to need something to fidget with, who's going to get cold and then hot and then cold again. You know, all those things that, you know, you can't exactly hop up and get the stuff out and pull it out. So it's keeping all of that stuff in a bag. If you have, you know, somebody with you who we used to say is chronologically gifted, you know, if you're traveling with an aging parent, you know, who frequently get cold and then they get hot and they need to eat smaller meals, all of that. You know, some, a little favorite snack, a little, you know, a hat, some sunscreen, all those things that, you know, you might pack and put away are kind of good to keep at hand that for some folks who are a little bit more fragile medically can be a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, that.
I really like number seven on here where you talk about, having a wearable GPS unit.
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be a very essential tool if you're traveling with maybe an elderly parent who is, you know, starting to show signs of early onset Alzheimer's or dementia, and you need to keep track of somebody, because some of the places where you're going to go, resorts or things like that, it can become very easily to get lost.
Yeah, especially when things look alike and you wander down a hallway. I mean, on our cruise just this past week, Terry and I both walked into the wrong cabin.
Really?
it was the last day when we were coming back from the restaurant before we disembarked, but they had all the doors open and they were, you know, but we had left our stuff in our cabin, so we were going back to get it. And I walked in, I'm like, where is my stuff? Why is the door wide open? And I'm like, oh, wait a minute.
This is in my cabin.
She's like, yeah, I walked into some other cabin. I'm like, oh, I just did that too.
So it sounds like we could all use a wearable GPS.
I was going to say, like, we could have, having wearable GPS and like a little tracker on our phone would have really came in handy for all of us.
Yeah, really.
If you have somebody in your life who, you know, has some cognitive delays, has some memory issues, has been known to wander off, you know, we're all talking about the ship we were just on, but it can be anywhere. You turn around and they're gone.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, even if they're wearing something distinctive in a crowd, you know, both for their sake and for your sake, it's just little thing, you know, something as simple as an ID bracelet that's got a, you know, or a very simple phone that they can have in their, pocket, not that they might be able to use it, but if somebody sees them or they seem to use it, someone can at least flip that phone open and there are three or four emergency numbers on there of someone to contact. So it's just, you know, this is not intended to make people afraid to travel. Mm-hmm. It's just to say, you know, there's a lot of things that we can put in place, help you put in place that you can be aware to put in place to make travel, you know, easier there's no reason for people to have to stay home. There are things that can be put in place and organized so that you can, you know, take that vacation with your whole family, you know, both for the caregiver and for the person who's doing the caregiving.
I have a question about the medicines, going back to that real quick, because this just happened with my husband. He was getting ready for a work trip, and he mentioned that he wished he had one of those pill, like the daily things But I always thought you should keep your medicine in its original prescription bottles with your name on it. But
yeah,
that's a thing, right?
That's best practice.
Yeah.
That's what's called best practice. And sometimes internationally, you know, if he was ever to go internationally, you know, just a bunch of pills can be questioned.
Yeah.
But best practice anywhere, domestically, internationally, is your meds in your medicine bottle. For all the reasons we've just talked about, you know, that we've mentioned on other podcasts. What if your flight gets delayed? What if your trip gets delayed, or you're in a storm? Or best practice is having your prescription, but your prescriptions in your prescription bottles.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it would be more convenient to just take them all in a blue plastic container, but
yeah.
You don't want to
raise any. I mean, I was even, when I went through Europe last year, I wanted to take toothpaste tabs instead of toothpaste to save on having to take liquids, because I was just doing carry on. And you put those little white pills in a baggie, and it doesn't look like toothpaste tablets.
Although I do say that I'll use that little counter thing for my vitamins and things, because if they take it from me, I'm not going to sweat it. Yeah. But, you know, I may also have prescription meds that I need to take every day, but I can either add those once I'm on the trip to the little bins, or I just do it all at the same time. So, because I don't want to carry my big vitamin, you know, multivitamins or like ginormous and this ginormous, and it's not a prescription. And if they take it from me, I won't die. It'll, you know, I just, I might not have as much vitamin E, but I'll be okay.
They waive the liquid thing, right? For prescriptions. Yeah, they do.
Laura, do you know that?
Formula and stuff.
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. But again, it would need to be in the prescription bottle. Right. They're not, you can't just say, this is cough syrup, I swear.
And one other thing to consider is like, things that you need to keep cold, like the amount of time your backup plan, having some of those like ice packs that you could. I had to travel with someone once that had medicine that had they had to be kept a certain temperature. Mm-hmm. And if you have those what are the disposable ice packs?
Yeah.
For just in case of an emergency. I don't even know if you can take those certain places, but that was one of the things that we had to go get some of those at some point in the trip to keep the medicine cold. Things like that, like about what you're going to do, it probably definitely requires a little more forethought than what we're used to in our travels. There's a couple extra steps there. Yeah. If this happens, then what? What is your plan B?
So what's a good practice for if you are in a wheelchair or a scooter, but you can't get a handicap accessible room? But say you don't necessarily have to have one. You can walk a little bit, but you can't actually get that bigger room.
Talk to your travel agent.
About your, yeah.
You mean on a cruise ship or anywhere?
Anywhere, but yeah, on a cruise, maybe.
Well, some things to think about and that your travel agent can help you think about is if you need to bring it in your room, what's the turning radius of how much space do you need to kind of make it around a corner to even get that piece of equipment in your room? So you may be thinking, well, I only need this. You know, I can walk around my room and I don't need an accessible shower. But especially on a cruise ship, there may not be enough space in the hallway to get it into your room. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know about all cruise lines, but I know that Royal Caribbean has a service where you can park your scooter outside the door, and they will take it down to be charged. I do not think they do custom-designed motorized wheelchairs, because the seating in those chairs has been, and the way they've been configured, are custom designed for the person who's sitting in them. But I think they will do it for scooters that have no, that are not custom designed.
So those would need to book early enough to get the handicapped accessible room.
Right. But there are other, I think it's on Carnival, that there are some cabins that are called like semi-accessible. Mm-hmm. And it just means that if there's a tub in the room, that it's got a lower lip to it, so that for someone who couldn't lift their leg all the way over. Mm-hmm. And there are some small pieces to that room that make it a semi-accessible room. And there are those options also. So, it's like just because you may see that all the accessible rooms are taken, there are some other options for you that may make it available for you to go on the ship. One of those is getting a suite, obviously, or getting something a little bit bigger if your budget allows that.
And that's another one that you'd want to book early.
Yeah, and that can be an issue. I mean, I have a client. It's a couple. They're both in custom wheelchairs. They have to travel with a caretaker, and there's really no way around that. And unfortunately, because they have to travel with a caretaker, they have a hard time booking far in advance. So there have been many times because they need to take that caretaker with them, and that caretaker may not want to go on vacation or go on a trip. At the same time, the commitment level is difficult with caretakers. Right. And so we've had a heck of a time trying to, they'll find a moment where they can travel and I'll check and there's no availability on what they want to do because they have such, because there's no compromise and they can't take a partially accessible stateroom. They need to be able to turn completely around in the bathroom and, in a wheelchair. And it does vary. And it's difficult. That doesn't mean that they can't travel at all, but usually they have very specific, like, I want to go to Italy. And, there's only certain ways they'll be able to do that. So that sort of segues a little bit into what, Laura, do you have some suggestions for, the best places to travel for folks with any sort of challenges?
Well, you've brought Italy up, so let's stay there for a minute. And that, you know, oftentimes we hear, oh gosh, not Europe. But actually, Rome is one of the more accessible places. There are curb cuts in Rome, and not all of Italy. Don't hear me saying all of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want, you know, folks sending in things saying, well, I tried to go to Naples. And most of the attraction hotels and restaurants are fully wheelchair accessible in Italy, in Rome. And the sidewalks have wheelchair ramps to them.
That's the, that would be one of the things that you would be relying on your travel agent to confirm for you, though, because a lot of the hotels I was in Rome were not. I mean, we could barely fit in our room. We could barely, or down the hallway with our luggage. So
no, but there
the lift wasn't. But there are options there.
And then
England, Scotland, and Ireland all are other good choices for that. They have accessible transportation, and they, you know, in terms of, especially if you're traveling with an aging parent, that there's a lot of tours that are, you know, kind of have beautiful coastlines or are easily seen via a tour bus or a driving tour, that, you know, would be something that they would really enjoy seeing and be able to be accessible. At one point, I was doing some looking around, and it was Dublin that had a lot of accessible areas to it. So I would think that you could, you know, there more and more there are accessible travel specialists, people who are well versed, who either use some type of motorized mobility device themselves, or have some kind of physical difference, or you know, someone like, just to get a little plug for myself, but
yeah,
who spent years and years in this field, who knows what it's like to, you know, travel with kids in wheelchair, or to even as of late have to have some accommodations made for myself. So I would tell you to make sure to check in with those folks, and I would not rule any destination out, but there are some destinations that make it, you know, with the cobblestone streets or the Amalfi coastline is probably not going to be one of your best options with the huge grades and the big hills and those kind of things. But there's always a way that we can make things happen if you're willing to, you know, take our suggestions on ways that you might be able to see that city. In Canada, there are some really nice places to visit. Hold on, I have my whole list of things down here.
Does Canada have something similar to the U.S.'s Americans ADA. With Disabilities Act? Yeah, because here we have, you know, they have to have elevators and ramps and, you know, things like that for newer buildings and all of that.
That's not something I know.
Okay. It just feels like an extension of the U.S.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, dear country. Canada, we apologize deeply for the comments on this podcast.
But you did.
Again.
Laura.
I was.
Go ahead.
Yep.
Go ahead.
One of the places that I've done some looking around for folks is actually Halifax, Nova Scotia. It has one, not that you want to be known for this, but it has one of the oldest aging populations in Canada.
Gosh, it feels so cold there, though. Everyone in the U.S. goes to Florida.
So
well, it's a great summer escape, though, when the heat can sometimes make traveling difficult.
True.
Both respiratory-wise and fatigue-wise for people who are traveling with their aging parents, for those folks who are, you know, in, I'm hesitant to say an age, but I'm going to say in the 70 and over bracket. But Nova Scotia has a lot of senior-friendly amenities and accessibility that, you know, seem to be critical. Besides that, they have, you know, beautiful beaches, great seafood, lots of lobster. The Halifax Harbor is beautiful. So it's just kind of a nice, and the crowds are not what you might see in other places, which can also be difficult if you have somebody with mobility challenges. Navigating a crowd becomes an issue of its own. So finding places that are not, you know, as not as crowded during the summer months, can be a real asset. And then, you know, there are some folks that as they get older are not as keen with traveling abroad or being, you know, as far away from their own medical providers, and Canada becomes a nice option for that.
Yeah.
You know, Montreal is another great place for that. And yes, they have cobblestone streets, but there's a lot of wheelchair accessible stations, and a lot of the trams and the rail has elevators to get people to the different levels.
So do you know where else has some cobblestone streets? Pittsburgh. It's true.
So those are all sort of land-based. Do you recommend cruising for folks?
Well, you know, the experiences that I've had and the training that I've had say that Royal Caribbean and Holland America are two of kind of the best for accessibility. And for Royal Caribbean has a specialized program, not only for people with mobility issues, but for folks who are on the autism spectrum. And they have specialized staff for that who are assigned to that family. And all of their staff goes through at least 15 minutes to 30 minutes of training during their generalized training to inform them about the needs of people with autism or with sensory differences, which makes them especially empathetic and good with kind of not only folks with autism, but anybody with a special need. So that's, you know, my two cruise lines of choice at this point are Royal Caribbean and Holland America for their you know, Disney has great accessible cabins.
Yeah.
And also I've seen do a great job with all kinds of kids with special needs.
Mm-hmm.
So those might be my top three recommendations. But every cruise line has accessible cabins. Every cruise line, you know, who comes out of the United States at least has a program where you can send in a sheet that talks about their special needs. It's just that the focus of Royal Caribbean, the focus of Holland America, and the kind of the natural sensitivity of Disney with it being such a big request for Make-A-Wish, and they're, you know, Disney's focus anyhow to surround families where they are, I think make for great recommendations. Sadly enough, some of the river cruises that I know are not real open to having scooters on board. So you do have to be able to, and I don't know if you guys have a little more experience with the river cruise, but the ones that I know of are not as open to that.
Yeah. It's not even that they're not open to it. They're not built for it. They're, right. You know, there will be a small staircase going from the third deck to the second. And I mean, it's a small, like, ship narrow staircase. There's not, they do, you know, often have loner walkers and even like loner things like walking canes with the little chairs where you can use it as a stick or a walking cane. And then if you need to rest, you can sort of open it up and it's got a little, you know,
my dad has one
hammock for your bottom, just to take a little bit of weight off your feet. So they offer things like that. And they have things like, portable headsets where your guide will wear a microphone, and then you have the headphones so that you don't have to be right up in the guide's face to hear. And that lets you set the volume for your own personal comfort level. So,
that's
you know,
not a special needs thing. Those are Those are awesome.
It can be. It can be very helpful for somebody.
I think we're just realizing how quickly we're all aging, that we need all of these things already.
how much we appreciate it. It is unfortunate, Laura, that the river cruises, they're not built for larger equipment like that.
But, you know, a great option is that oftentimes a lot of the places where a river cruiser, you might be on it for a lot of days, because we can often find kind of a day-long river cruise that you can take, you know, and be on that river and see some of the sights from the river, because it is a beautiful view. So we can find those that are accessible. It's just the ones where you're spending the nights on the boat and having meals on the boat where it becomes an issue of kind of practicalness for the way that the boats are designed. Yeah. I do want to mention, though, before we go, that if you're in, especially with the mobility issues, which seem to be more of the concern, is that just know that there are excursions that will accommodate you. You don't have to just stay on the boat. When there are ports that you can pull down, we have resources for companies that will accommodate and have specially designed excursions, so that you're not always seeing things from the bus, but that you can get on and off the helicopter or whatever it is. There are people who will help you accommodate that.
So, and there are, for those who have maybe a few mobility challenges but aren't quite in a scooter yet, but do are a slower pace, there are even some of the luxury small ship companies. I don't know if you guys remember when we were talking with Ponant, how they were talking about their zero entry, their Zodiacs, how you can just enter directly. That makes a big difference for a lot of people. Yeah. So, you know, talk to your travel agents. They will have resources for these type of accommodations that can be made that you might not know are out there, like these types of options, these programs, like Laura was talking about, the autism at sea and things like that. So,
yeah, the great news is the world is becoming more and more and more accessible. Mm-hmm. And so, as I like to say, there's no boundaries to a great vacation. Mm-hmm. We can, I would say dump your bucket list out and trust that your travel agent wants to do everything you can to make those dreams come true. And if we can't, we can't. But there's more and more options for adventure travel and for seeing the world, all parts of the world. So.
Well, that is our show for this week. Thank you for hanging out with us. And we would love for you to share your life-changing travel moments with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on outlandertravel.com. Please be sure to subscribe to us and leave us a review in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. On behalf of Elizabeth, Sandy, Laura, and myself, Lindsay, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you next time. Gotta fly!